It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please won't you be my neighbor?
Today would have been Fred Rogers' 80th birthday, and we're going to celebrate his life this hour of the program. Someone who worked at WQED, where he was for many years doing Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, said of him he was a non-judging and non-judgmental person, quite simply the finest person I have ever known. He truly lived a life of love. Professor Mary Kimmel is our guest this hour, Professor Emerita at the University of Pittsburgh School of Information Sciences, the newest fellow of the Fred Rogers Center for Early Learning and Children's Media at St. Vincent College. She has started a project to publish a paper on the foundational principles of his work, his significant, and my, they were significant, contributions to child development and children's media, and new directions for building upon his legacy. The purpose is to review the work of Fred Rogers and his impact on several generations of children, their families, caregivers, and educators. And it looks at his dedication to understanding and respecting the early years of childhood, complementing his deep faith in God and his sense of humor. Focusing on children's TV will address the design of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood program, elements of strength in the work of Rogers, and comments from those who have collaborated with him. And Professor Mary Kimmel is one of those. She worked with Fred Rogers for many years and continues to work with his production company. She knew him and observed the rapport that he had with children, his talents, treating each child as an individual, using music on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, his spirituality, and also, some might say, the fact that he saved public television. We're going to welcome phone calls for Professor Mary Kimmel. I remember when we did a show the day after he died, and we were all crying. It was one of those remarkable shows where we just couldn't keep from crying because he was who he appeared to be in his off-television life and had a profound influence on so many generations of children and adults. We'll welcome calls at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, or send an email if you'd like. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Mary Kimmel, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. I usually go by Maggie.
Oh,
so
I like
that.
If you
don't mind, that
no,
would be fine.
No, I don't mind that at all. I prefer to have Maggie. That's great. I like his quote. I went into television because I hated it so, and I thought there was some way of using this fabulous instrument to be of nurture to those who would watch and listen. There aren't too many people who go into television or radio, I might add, with that purpose in mind.
Well, it was a kind of purpose that was Fred's from the very beginning. He, the project that I'm working on, the legacy of Fred Rogers and children's television, has been really, really fascinating. I started working with them, I must have been a consultant for 17 or 18 years.
Oh, my.
Primarily on reading and books for children and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's funny. As a professor, I've written books of my own, and I've taught a lot of people in the graduate program, and I was actually chair of the department for 9 years, but the only claim to fame I have with my family is that I was on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and it was only for about 5 minutes. But it was a very remarkable association, and I've learned so much more since I started this project. He was a very lonely, overweight, isolated child. He grew up in a very middle to upper middle class family. The family was very civic minded, and he grew up as an only child until he was 11, when they adopted his sister as an infant. And even when he was in high school, people made fun of him, and he was really pretty isolated until one young man who was the football and basketball and baseball and class president star had an injury and went to the hospital. And Fred, at the behest of his teacher, started visiting Jim in the hospital, and the two became fast friends. Hmm. So that when Fred left high school, he was editor of the yearbook and president of the student council.
Oh, my.
And he went off to Dartmouth with every intention of majoring in romantic languages and coming back and going to the seminary. But along the way, he decided that his music, which had been something of a great deal of interest and actually solace to him when he was a child, he decided that that's what he wanted to do. And one of the people at Dartmouth suggested that he go to Rollins College or see what their program was in Florida. And that's what he did. And he graduated with a degree in music from there. And still with the intention of going to the seminary. And he came home for Easter vacation in his senior year at Rollins and saw children's television for the first time. And they were throwing pies at each other.
Oh.
And he thought, you know, there must be better uses of this.
Right.
And so when he graduated, he went off to New York and started with NBC. And that's where he got his early television experience.
Mm-hmm. I've heard from many people, and tell me your experience, Maggie, with him, that he truly was a man of great love for everyone. That everybody who's known him has said they have the utmost respect for him and consider him one of the kindest, most thoughtful people they've ever known in their whole life.
Well, he had the ability to turn the conversation back to you, to me, if I would say to him, now, Fred, what do you really mean about this? And he'd say, well, Maggie, what do you think it is? And before you know it, I'm talking about my feelings, take on whatever it is. And he always spoke directly to you. There was no looking over the shoulder to see if somebody more important was coming along or whatever. Mm-hmm. He looked at you. And for some people, it was really off-putting. Garrison Keillor did one of his shows here in Pittsburgh. And they usually introduce a local celebrity or person. And so Garrison introduced Mr. Rogers. And, of course, the audience in Hines Hall stood up and gave him such an ovation that it was very difficult to calm them down. And they were supposed to sing It's You I Like. And, of course, Fred sang it to Garrison. And although they'd practiced it together, Garrison simply couldn't go on with it.
Oh.
And he had to turn away and sing his part to the audience. And Fred never wavered. I mean, it was It's You I Like. So, yes, he was. And he was extremely generous with his time.
And this is a big task. Let me just ask the question and take it whatever direction you want. You're writing about his legacy. What is his legacy?
Well, there are three aspects of his life that are really very significant. One is the music, and one is the knowledge of child development, and the other is his spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And there will not be another Mr. Rogers Neighborhood, but there are some things about his experience that I think really will make a workable legacy. He, in New York, he was there for about two and a half years. He started as a gopher and worked his way up to floor manager and assistant producer. And it was primarily with the music shows for NBC. And he actually worked with Kirk Browning, who up until his most recent, very recent death, was the producer of Live at the Met. And but he, the only non-musical show he worked with was Gabby Hayes, the old crusty cowboy. And one time Fred said to him, "There's such a vast audience out there. How do you handle it?" And Gabby Hayes said, "I talk to one little buckaroo at a time." And that stuck with Fred. In fact, he really got a tremendous grounding in television in those early days when it was absolute chaos. And he learned a lot. And what he learned, he put into practice so that he understood that the relationship between the performer and the and his audience was really one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And so he spoke through the camera to individual children, and he would pause, letting them have some time to work through things or answer him back. And time again, hundreds of letters went to him saying, "When my kids watch you, they talk to you." And when children met him, they'd say things like, "How did you get out of the box?" But, you know, Fred considered the space, the discussion between himself and that child, he called it a sacred space.
Yes, I love that.
And that, I think, is a cornerstone of his, of what his essence really was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a concern for the individual, even though at the most popular time of the program, he was reaching something like 10 million families a week.
Mm-hmm. I like this thought of his, because everybody's sort of ad-libbing these days, that he has been called a perfectionist in a good sense of that word, that he owed it to children to make sure that every word on his show was thought out because it was so important. The words were so important.
Yes, absolutely. And the words were, you know, everybody talks about his very slow pacing. Fred never talked about that in anything that I have found so far. But he used that pacing very deliberately because young children need time both to process language and ideas. And so it became a very smooth but very slow-paced dialogue. On the other hand, he also has a reputation of being, how can I say that, too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And less than macho, and he was the first to admit that one. But it was this conviction that children would be able to be involved in a very fundamental way if their interest was captured and their feelings were acknowledged. And he lived by that. He didn't deal with fluff and just happy thoughts. One commentator has said that he was at least as dark as the Brothers Grimm, talking about death, the death of the goldfish, the divorce, feeling mad, controlling your feelings. And he always said, you are special, but he never said, you can get there easily. One of the songs that really has impressed me is Wishes Don't Make Things Come True.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he didn't skirt the difficult things. He said, here are things that happen. You get mad. What do I do with the mad I feel? And so it was a control of emotions, but the recognition that children did have these feelings.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Maggie. Maggie Kimmel is our guest, Professor Emerita at the University of Pittsburgh School of Information Sciences. Today would have been Fred Rogers' 80th birthday, and we're talking about his legacy this hour of the program. He has been credited. We'll ask her if it's correct to say that he saved public television. We'll play, after we pause for a moment, a little bit of his testimony before Congress on public television. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we'll take your phone calls, of course, as well, and we'll do that momentarily. 800-486-8655 is our number, 414-227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're celebrating Mr. Rogers' life this hour of the program. We're going to play a little clip of when he went to Congress back in 1969 and was talking about the importance of quality television and has been credited. We'll ask Maggie if she thinks that this is true. He gave a 6-minute testimony. He was a relatively unknown Fred Rogers and talked about how television had the potential to give children hope and actually create more productive citizens. Here's a portion of what he had to say.
I think you really have to be yourself. The best thing that you can do for anybody, and I'm sure you've learned that, is to just offer one more honest adult in their lives. Well, I hope that they can know that they can be fine parents with the time that they do have with their children, and that they continue to grow themselves. Because that's truly the most important thing about parenthood, is the ability to be able to grow through all of those early stages of childhood that you went through. You have a second chance to grow through them again with your children.
Fred Rogers, we're celebrating his 80th birthday. And is it fair to say that he saved public television, Maggie?
Well, he went a long way to saving it. They were going to cut funding entirely, and Fred was asked to go and appear before the Senate committee chaired by Pastore of Rhode Island, who was a curmudgeon, a kindly curmudgeon, but, you know, a fairly fierce fellow. And Fred talked to him, and that little clip that you played is exactly is from that testimony. And he talked about how he was working to make television a better movie, a better medium. And Pastore at the end said, "Well, I've been bored to tears these last 2 days, but you are the first one that has made my hair stand on edge. You have your $20 million, young man." So I think it would be fair to say that he made a really significant impression. But, you know, he wasn't totally unknown at that time. He was... it was early production of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He'd come back from the CBC in Canada, where he was for a year, and that was the first time that he was in front of the camera. And he came back and started producing Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And it looked like the show was going to be canceled. In fact, many of the programs were in danger of being canceled. And WQED here in Pittsburgh was the first community-sponsored public television.
Oh, really?
The rest were all involved with education.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a really big chance and said, "No, the community will sponsor this."
Hmm.
And they were afraid that it was going to fall apart. So WQED had a reception for children and families to kind of raise public awareness and so on. And they expected a few hundred people, and several thousand turned up.
Oh, my.
Standing in the rain around the block twice.
Huh.
And this was part of the Eastern Educational Network, which was shown in a number of cities: Boston, Chicago, New York, what other one? San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I know it said Eastern, but they did it to the east side of San Francisco and Miami. And so GBH in Boston said, "Well, if you got some people to turn out in Pittsburgh, we'll have a small reception up here, and maybe that'll boost it up here." So they prepared for about 500 people, and it is documented that more than 10,000 showed up. They had more than went to the Red Sox games, coming to this reception.
Isn't that something?
Rogers.
Hmm. Let's go to phone calls. We start with Jean from Brookfield. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Oh, what a wonderful man. Oh, my gosh. I remember watching him as a child, and the house that we grew up in was 200 years old when we moved in, and oh, these huge, big clawfoot bathtubs that were so scary to a tiny child. It was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
But then he did a show about
not going down the drain.
You can't hit down the
drain.
Yes. And, you know, it took a little bit of time, but I realized Mr. Rogers was right, and all my personal hygiene improved tremendously.
As did thousands of other children, probably, Maggie, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is a parents wrote to Fred all the time about the reaction of their children, and there's one letter from a father who said he had been watching with his young son and his 4-year-old, and out of the blue, the boy turned to his father and said, "You know, Mr. Rogers doesn't go to the bathroom." And the father said, "I tried to explain to him." First of all, the father said, "Well, how do you know that?" And the youngster said, "Well, I've never seen the bathroom, and he's never been in it." And so his father tried to explain that there were a lot of people that you didn't see in the bathroom, but that didn't mean that they wouldn't use it. And So they had this long, involved conversation, and finally his son came back to him and he said, "Look, Dad, he has a living room and a kitchen, and he can go to make-believe, but I have never seen a bathroom. Mr. Rogers does not use the bathroom." And Fred actually rocked the boy and said, "Yes, I do."
You wonder how he had time. I guess he responded to almost everybody who wrote to him, didn't he?
He did indeed. He responded personally. He had staff who helped draft letters, and then he would finalize them and sign them and send them off.
Hmm. Thanks, Gene, so much for your call. We go to Darren from La Crosse next. Hi, Darren. Hello, Darren. Well, we'll see. We'll check back on you in a minute, Darren. Beverly from Franklin. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Professor Kimmel, I'm so glad that someone is addressing Mr. Rogers and taking this into the future in writing, because I think his greatest legacy is all of us. I grew up in Pittsburgh. I watched, showing my age, I watched Josie Carey. Aha! You know, so that gives you an idea. So I grew up on Josie Carey, and when he went on to have his own show. And, you know, you always felt that he was speaking to you.
Yes.
And I think that, and as my son, you know, when we moved to Milwaukee and we lived here and my son was watching, I kept saying, "That's back where Grandma and Grandpa is," you know. And he always thought of Mr. Rogers and Grandma and Grandpa are all in the same
neighborhood.
Genre.
Yeah.
You know? So that was his connection. And he, in the age of Sesame Street, which he loved, you know, and the clip, 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 clip of Sesame Street,
yeah,
and the video games that were available and the fast pace, he still always went back and watched Mr. Rogers and had so many more questions for me from Mr. Rogers' program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not only did he address the children, but hopefully he addressed the parents too and kind of showed parents how to deal with your children and how do you deal with their questions and you're not to be afraid and address things directly. So I think that
you're absolutely right. And Fred realized very early on that while he was the champion of the children and speaking to them directly, that he also had to address parents. And so in the mid-70s, he started doing some specials, and then in 68 or 69, when there were the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, he did an hour special on how to deal with children in very traumatic times. And he realized that it was very important to encourage families, adults, to listen carefully. And he modeled that all the time. And the creators of Blue's Clues on PBS looked very much at Fred's work. And, in fact, the producer of Blue's Clues is one of the readers for the paper that I'm doing, and she says that they looked at how Mr. Rogers interacted with that individual child, and I think it is a big factor of having a real person, not an animated Teletubby or Big Bird, or Barney. It's a real person that says to them, "You are special."
Right. I remember his message. You were talking about what happened during the 60s. He also addressed the Gulf War in 1990 and 91, asking the audience, assuring the audience that children in the neighborhood would be well cared for, asking parents to promise to take care of their children. And then they aired it again before the military action against Iraq in 2003, right?
Yes. Yeah. And by that time, he had really achieved, I guess the only place, the only way you can describe it is icon stature.
Yes.
I mean, he was, people weren't making fun of him anymore. And speaking of those parodies, at first he was really bothered by it.
Was he?
Yeah. Because he said, you know, I'm talking to the children and the adults have to understand that. But, and he was in New York doing some taping with David Newell, who plays Mr. McFeely and is the kind of PR person for Family Communications, which is the production company. And David discovered that Eddie Murphy was in the same building. And, of course, this was the heyday of Saturday Night Live and Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And they, and David said to Fred, let's go meet Eddie Murphy. And Fred, at first, was very reluctant. And, but go they did. And they knocked on his dressing room, and Eddie Murphy opened the door, and he said, oh, the real Mr. Rogers, and came out and threw his arms and said, I'm so glad to meet you. If it weren't for you, nobody would laugh at what I was doing. It's because people love you, Mr. Rogers. And I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beverly, thank you so much for the call. Let's try Darren again. Are you there, Darren?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I was just blown away. I don't know if I'm living in a different world, but I had no idea that Fred Rogers had died. And when I turned on your program this morning, just blown away. I'm not a religious man, and I think that something that stands out for me is he instilled something that really impressed upon me the values that I guess I have today. And I have three kids of my own. My oldest is 11, and it's Fred Rogers has spans the generations, which is something that we can all cling to. When I heard your program, and it was on Fred Rogers, it was like a bell went off in my head.
I remember doing this show. I mentioned it at the top of this program, Maggie, the day after he died, which is 5 years ago now. It's hard to believe it was that long ago. And it was hard to do that show. We talk about a lot of issues, but we were all crying. Everybody was crying who called in. I was crying. We were all crying. It was just hard. We just sort of supposed to hold your composure, but everybody took the loss. It's such a great loss.
And a very personal loss. Because of the way that he addressed his audience, we were personally involved.
Right.
And it's extraordinarily powerful. I appreciate your feelings, Darren, because we know that. Their target audience is 3 to 5 year olds, but we know that after children seem to sort of outgrow that, but sometime around 10 or 11 or 12, just at the onset of adolescence, a lot of kids go back and watch him again. And he has a very loyal senior citizen viewership.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh.
In fact, in the first special that they did for PBS on Mr. Rogers Talks to Parents, they were in a studio with a small studio audience, and they took calls from the outside. And the very first call was from a gentleman who said, I'm 74 years old, and I want you to know, Mr. Rogers, I think you're very special even today.
Hmm.
And when I feel lonely and I feel unloved, I watch you all over again.
We have an email. I'm in the audiovisual field at Marquette University. I've attended many graduation ceremonies over the years. Fred Rogers gave the commencement speech maybe 10 years ago, and I was amazed by how clearly he addressed the spirit in all the graduates of the day. I no longer recall his words, but I remain moved and remember the feeling that filled the Bradley Center. How many addresses at graduation ceremonies did he give, Maggie, and were they recorded? Whoa, that would be nice.
They weren't necessarily recorded. There's a commencement speech from, I know I'm going to get this wrong because I don't have it in my notes in front of me, but I think it may have been from Mills College. He gave more than 40 commencement speeches, and some of them, well, all of them had some small thing in common. He used this as a way of reaching the audience in a number of different venues, but almost always in the commencement speeches. And he'd say, now, I want you to know, I want you to think about those people who helped you get here today.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're out there and they're thinking about you and they know how special you are.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take 1 minute of silence and think of them.
Hmm.
And he would stand there for 60 seconds. That moment of silence was one of the most powerful things that I have ever observed. And he got a lifetime award from the Daytime Emmys. It was at our Radio City Music Hall in New York. And the place was filled to the rafters with soap opera stars and quiz show hosts and all the people of daytime television. And he said to them, I think it's really important for all of us to recognize where we come from. And I would like us to take a few seconds to think of all those people who are very special to us. And there was a half a second of kind of nervous giggles. And he was absolutely silent.
Hmm.
This is on primetime television, and the camera started panning the audience, and women lost their eyelashes. They were weeping. These very glamorous folk. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. It was incredible, at least from an observational point of
view. Let's welcome more phone calls, and we'll do that in a moment. Maggie Kimmel is our guest. Maggie is Professor Emerita at the University of Pittsburgh School of Information Sciences, the newest fellow of the Fred Rogers Center for Early Learning and Children's Media at St. Vincent College. And she's working on the on his legacy, on the foundational principles of his work, his contributions to child development and children's media, and new directions for building upon his legacy. She worked with Fred Rogers as an advisor to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and she co-edited Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Children's Television, and Fred Rogers for more than 10 years. She wrote a quarterly bibliography for caregivers in the Around the Neighborhood newsletter. She's the editor for a series of children's books, the Golden Triangle books, and she was on his show. We have to find out how she made her appearance on his show. Here's the number, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Or if you would like to send an email, you could do that as well. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
What do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? when the whole wide world seems oh so wrong, and nothing you do seems very right. What do? Do you punch a bag? Do you pound some clay or some dough? Do you round up friends for a game of tag or see how fast you go? It's great to be able to stop when you've planned a thing that's wrong and be able to do something else instead and think this song. I can stop when I want to, can stop when I wish, can stop, stop, stop anytime. And what a good feeling to feel like this and know that the feeling is really mine. Know that there's something deep inside that helps us become what we can. For a girl can be someday a lady, and a boy can be someday a man.
Lyrics from one of his songs that he presented at that congressional testimony that we were talking about earlier in 1969, and this is an email that goes with that. Maggie, I went to a basket. It's from Betty from Racine. I went to a basketball game with my son, who was five, and a friend who was almost five. An unpleasant incident took place on the court, and we all, except the boys, stood up. When we sat down, the man behind the boys continued standing. I looked up at him and said, how old are these kids? Or he said, and they sound like they're in high school. The boys were talking about how to control your temper, which they had learned by watching Mr. Rogers. He was a wonderful man. There was a lot of learning that went on, wasn't there?
Yes, a lot of learning.
Let's go to Eleanor from Manitowoc. Hi, Eleanor.
Good morning. I'm from Pittsburgh.
Oh.
And I actually live next door to St. Edmund's Academy.
Uh-huh.
Fred's kids went to school, and my brother went to St. Edmund's also. So I can remember Fred coming to pick his boys up from school and just being mesmerized by seeing Mr. Rogers in a car. It was unbelievable. I wanted to ask you a question about Johnny Costa and his involvement with all of this, because he was the music director for so long.
Yes.
Could you talk about that? And I just want to say that it's wonderful to hear about Fred, because I graduated from Pitt, too. And us Pittsburgh people, he was revered all over Pittsburgh.
Yes, he was. And people were used to seeing him in line at the Giant Eagle or along the street. And one day I was walking across campus, and I heard this wild tooting horn blasting. And I looked over, and Fred was leaning out of the car window, and he said, "Hey, Toots," in a perfect Lady Elaine voice. You know, and everybody turned. Well, anyway, yes, he was really great. Fred wrote all 900 scripts, uh-huh. And he wrote all the music and all the lyrics. And Johnny Costa, who was a very well-known jazz pianist at first, and a very colorful figure. And he and Fred got along like a house of fire. And Johnny would often take the melody that Fred had developed, and he would embellish it and make it his own. He continued to be the musical director, and most of the music was played live. It was not pre-recorded, so that the music went along with what they were taping. But at that same time, I mean, the program was always taped. But the music went along with that, and if it didn't work, they'd shoot it again.
Hmm. Is this story true? I love this story, Maggie. He had his car stolen from the parking lot near WQED, and it was the same car he was driving this, I think it was an Impala, for many years. He filed a police report. The story was picked up by the local news, and within 48 hours, the car was back, and there was a note on it saying, "If we'd known it was yours, we never would have taken it."
Well, it's even more ironic than that. They stole it from his son's driveway when Fred and Joanne were babysitting.
Huh.
And the rest of the story is true. They found something in the back of the car that the people that took the car, a director's chair or something, and indeed, the note said, "Dear Mr. Rogers, we would never have taken this if we knew it was yours."
It's quite a story. Eleanor, thanks so much for the call. Let's go next to Wayne from Racine. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. One of my favorite photographs is hanging in my office here at home, an autographed, picked up photograph of Fred Rogers. I got it because, well, he was a great, I think, influence on my kids when they were growing up, all four of them. And I used to talk about him with great affection in my introduction to philosophy classes at UW Parkside.
Oh, ah.
And at the end of the course, one of my students gave me a signed autograph, a photograph of Fred Rogers.
Wow.
So it's hanging there on my wall.
That's
great
nice.
Man and a great philosopher.
Yes.
He was a great philosopher. I love the books that he's published about his philosophy.
Right. And he was very willing to do whatever he could. As he grew older, his life became, it was more and more and more whittled down to what he wanted as basic. And when they stopped production in 1999, the last program was aired in 2000, he said to his staff and to several other people that his days would be filled with prayer and reading and contemplation about who he was and where he belonged. The family had a house on Nantucket where they would go for the summer, and Fred would read and work on scripts and walk the beaches, and he had a wonderful sense of whimsy. Teresa Hines, at his memorial service, Teresa Hines Carey, at the public memorial service that we had at Hines Hall here, talked about visiting him on Nantucket, and they were sitting out on a little promontory looking out at the sea, and this crazy seagull landed near them, and Fred said to Teresa, "That's Elvira." And Teresa Hines said, "Elvira?" And Fred said, "Yeah, and she's a little crazy." And you could tell just by the way that Mrs. Carey phrased it, that it was one of those moments where you either rolled your eyes or started laughing. But Fred was perfectly serious, and he knew the gull. He was crazy.
You talk about the water. He swam, I understand, almost every day of his life. That
absolutely
endears me to him.
Every day.
He was a swimmer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When will your latest work on him be published, Mary? Or Maggie, sorry.
Well, it will be part of the opening ceremony for the Rogers Center, so I'm a little over deadline right now. I hope that we will finish it by mid-April, for sure,
mm-hmm.
And then it has to be produced and all of that.
Mm.
It's going to be, I think it will be something like a booklet.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll let you get back to work. We want to end with Mr. Rogers' last show. Thank you, Maggie, so much for being with us. Mary,
you're very welcome.
Kimmel, our guest, and this is from his sign-off, his last program.
You know, it happens so often. I walk down the street and someone 20 or 30 or 40 years old will come up to me and say, "You are Mr. Rogers, aren't you?" And then they tell me about growing up with the neighborhood and how they're passing on to the children they know what they found to be important in our television work, like expressing their feelings through music and art and dance and sports and drama and computers and writing, and invariably we end our little time together with a hug. I'm just so proud of all of you who have grown up with us, and I know how tough it is some days to look with hope and confidence on the months and years ahead. But I would like to tell you what I often told you when you were much younger. I like you just the way you are.
Fred Rogers, on his 80th birthday, we celebrate today the first day of spring. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program and thinking of this. This is a good show to do. And thanks to John Treader for on-air production. We'll return following the news.